Welcome to the Judge John Hodgman podcast. I'm Bailiff Jesse Thorne. We're in chambers this week. How are you, Judge Hodgman?
Well, Jesse Thorne, our regular springtime, falltime, wintertime bailiff, coming back in from your summer vacation. Maybe you're not taking a vacation.
This is my summer vacation, Judge Hodgman. I get to join you in Maine, eat up all your lobsters, and look at the leaves change. I don't know a lot about Maine.
You know more than you realize, because A, I am in Maine. B, we have a lot of lobsters here. You couldn't possibly eat them all. It's a glut of lobsters right now up in Maine. And C, you could watch the leaves change, because the beauty of Maine is fall time starts August 1st.
Yeah. I thought of a fourth thing that I could do in Maine, which is sun myself on your cold, rocky, inhospitable beaches.
Yeah, you could hurt your back by lying down on a beach and sunning yourself for the 2 hours of sunlight we get now that it's August. That's what makes a Maine summer so terrific. It helps you. It's a great vacation if you are a person like me who secretly believes he doesn't deserve pleasure in life. You can hear a lot more about this when you come and see me on tour, when I talk about Maine, Massachusetts, and my lack of pleasure. On my Vacation Land tour, which is coming up this fall, I've mentioned it before, and I'll mention it again, johnhodgman.com/tour. Thanks for opening the door for a little plug there, Jesse.
Of course. I saw that show. I was lucky enough to see that show in an early stage here in Los Angeles. It's a really beautiful show. I think people should really take the time out to go see John Hodgman as they've never seen him before. But let's see John Hodgman as they have seen you before, which is to say,
without seeing him at all.
Here's our first case from Jared. Your Honor, I have a Teflon pan. My cousin likes to use metal on my pan when he comes over and cooks with it, using a fork to turn meat over. He says he's careful. I've asked him not to use metal utensils, as he might scratch the Teflon off, which makes the pan less effective and gets in the food. His retort is, get a cast iron pan. He's promised to replace the pan if he scratches it, but I couldn't ask a grown man to do that. Child would be another story, one presumes. Judge, please forbid Cousin Alex from cooking with metal utensils on my pan.
Ugh. Jesse, don't you hate it when you got one of those cooking cousins coming over to your house and all of a sudden they're cooking meat in one of your pans?
I know, that's the worst. Everybody knows about that. That is a common and universal experience, to have a meat cooking cousin who's constantly coming over to do his meat cooking on your pans.
What kind of visit is it? Hey, can I come over? Are you going to... Why do you want to come over? I just want to say hi. You want to cook meat in my pan, don't you? Yeah, I do.
What do you got, chops? Right. What do you got? Yeah. T-bone?
Cousin cooking visits doesn't feel very common to me, but I'll allow that it's possible that Jared is not a liar, and he does have a cousin named Alex, who does use his Teflon pan and scratches it all up with a fork. And then Jared says, no. And then my favorite part of this letter is, his retort is, get a cast iron pan, which is good advice. Because honestly, Jared, you shouldn't have Teflon at all. That is an unnecessary addition. Unless you maybe have one for scrambled eggs. Like one small one for eggs that you only use for that. But, you know, I've stopped using Teflon a long time ago. Any kind of nonstick, because actually Teflon is a brand name. You know that, Jesse. So we gotta watch out. I don't want to buzz market for the Teflon company. But I guess I'm not doing a great job because I'm telling you they stink. So, I think the retort to get a cast iron pan, as Jesse and I have discussed in the past on this podcast, is a great idea because they are beautiful. Durable, you can get them vintage, and seasoned properly, and heated up properly, and treated properly. You will not have an issue with sticking. And even if you were using stainless steel surfaced pans, you would not have an issue with sticking as long as you take the time to heat the pan properly, and use enough oil or butter, and also don't scratch it up with a fork. One should take care. One should not poke around with a sharp granny fork in your pan, scratching up that bottom, whether it's Teflon or even Alex's beloved cast iron. You should use tongs and care. Two things that I often encourage people to use, tongs and care. I do love Alex's retort. I love that it's his retort. Get a cast iron pan. From now on, that's how I'm going to... Anytime someone gets in my grill, I'm saying, hey, get a cast iron pan, buddy.
I like the idea that the retort here is that the guest demands that the place he's visiting purchase new equipment on his behalf.
Yeah, right.
It's like if you're always borrowing your friend's car and he's like, hey, would you mind not like revving it and then slamming it into gear so you can take off faster from stoplights? And then the guy's like, whatever, get an automatic.
Right. No, I appreciate that this goes against all of our traditional siding on behalf of manners, because this dude is invading his cousin's kitchen and treating his pans like garbage. But the problem is his pan is garbage. So even though Alex is unquestionably rude, this is not a manners podcast. This is a justice podcast. He's being rude about a garbage pan. It's fruit of the poison tree. I can't allow it. Get a cast iron pan.
Okay, here's something from Nina. My dumb husband insists that the toilet paper should be underhanded because The Simpsons told him so. However, smart people and non-serial killers agree that overhand is the only way to go. Please, Your Honor, settle this debate. I honestly can hardly believe that we have not been called upon to settle this debate, lo, these past 5 years or however long we've been doing this show.
You know, it's interesting because this is such an issue of heated debate between spouses, partners, roommates, even pals. And how do you do it, Jesse?
This is really going to upset 90% of our audience. I have found a way in answering this question to alienate more people than either one of the answers you were expecting.
All right.
I don't care and don't really pay attention when I put it on. So it's either underhand or overhand, depending on which way the toilet paper happened to be in my hand when I was trying to get that little spring-loaded bar to stick into the little prong holes.
You know, it's interesting because, of course, what I was going to do is whatever you said, I was going to curse at you angrily. But I don't care either, truthfully. And so it works out perfectly because now I can concur with my good friend Jesse Thorne. It doesn't matter. It does not matter. And I don't pay attention to it at all. And I can't see that there is any regional consistency or ethnographic or demographic consistency. It's just all, I think, random how it was that you were raised. And it gets passed down generationally that's the way the toilet paper should look. Joel Mann, sitting across from me here at WERU in Blue Hill, Maine, also listen online at weru.org. Joel, which way do you do it?
This is very important to me. And every time I see that it's done incorrectly, I actually reverse it and it has to come over the top. But right. I don't make a point of it. I just do it.
All right. You're a monster, Joel, and I'm leaving now. I'm sorry, Jesse. We're going to have to shut this down. But Joel, I'm not really mad at you. And I will continue to support WERU. It is a listener-supported station here in Blue Hill, Maine, which allows me to come in here and do the podcast remotely. And I will not stop the podcast in anger, because you could tell my anger was fake. Over the top, under the bottom, I don't care. If you do it over the top, then you can do that hotel thing where you fold it into a point. Oh, boy, Jesse. The very first TED conference I ever went to, there was a woman talking about memes, and we're not talking, this is like the real hardcore definition, the original definition of meme. The original definition of meme was not Icon has pictures of cats with bold-faced lettering that you spread around, but it was the idea that ideas are like genes. This is why they came up with the word, I think, that they are self-interested and that they duplicate for the sake of duplicating. And in other words, ideas have a kind of, in effect, evolutionary consciousness. Even though we all understand that they're ideas, they're concepts, and they aren't thinking for themselves. That ideas spread irregardless of whether they're a good idea or a bad idea. Ideas exist to self-replicate and replicate. And so this woman gave a long talk about this and showed many, many photos of toilet paper rolls from hotels that she had visited all around the world. I think there were maybe 25 or 30 photos of this toilet paper roll going over the top and then being folded by the chambermaid into a point. And she wanted everyone in the TED audience to believe that this was this toilet paper roll idea infecting the minds of housekeepers around the globe, like a conspiracy, like a contagion. And I was like, TED conference, I love you. You're weird. Whatever the case is, though, I say it doesn't matter. And so I'm arbitrarily going to rule in favor of the wife because she called her husband a dum-dum, and that made me laugh.
Here's something from Audrey. I asked my coworkers, both of whom were named Chris, for their thoughts on a personal dispute, and they disagree with my take. Can you tell me who's right? I have a very loud next-door neighbor who seems like he's probably in his 40s. He's new to the neighborhood, and he doesn't understand that our neighborhood is a quiet one with mostly old people, families, and boring young people like me. My bedroom window is near his patio, where he parties on weekend nights and sometimes even Thursdays, capitalized, listening to electronic dance music. These parties begin around 2 a.m. and can go until 5 a.m. I think I should go over and express my distaste and recommend a resolution, whereas my coworkers feel that I should call the police and remain anonymous. They think that based on his character as I have observed it from my bedroom window, he might not react well. I would really like to leave the cops out of it, at least as an initial reaction. Help! I think at the end of that question, she fell into a well.
Well, maybe we can get some help to her. And by the time we rescue her from the bottom of the well, we'll have solved her problem for her. I can tell you that your neighbor, your mid-40-year-old neighbor who is listening to electronic dance music, is going through a profound personal midlife crisis. He is probably divorced and trying to restart his life by pretending to be a young person. And his dance parties end at 5 a.m. with him alone in tears. How do I know this? See if you can figure it out. In any case, I think that if you were to confront him,
Judge Hodgman, when you said, "See if you can figure it out," you were rewarding every one of our listeners who was waiting for the drop in that question.
Good. Boom, 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 boom. Bing, ding, 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 bang, rang. Maybe if you go over there, you will see me partying with him. I'm enjoying EDM quite a bit. But what I want to say is that this is not a violent man. This is a sad man. Unless he's an outlaw or a crazy person. The reality is, I think your instinct to be a good neighbor is a good one. And less cowardly than your friends. Going to your neighbor and looking him in the eye and saying, "Hey, this is a little bit much. You may not realize it." Can forge a relationship and maybe pull this guy back from the brink of terrible depression. The only thing is, you only get one shot at this, because if it goes bad, then he will be mad at you. And if you end up having no recourse but to call the police later, he will guess that it is you, and he might start leaving dead things on your doorstep. Who knows? Even though I think I really know who this guy is, and there's no way at all that it's projection in any way. By the way, I'm not divorced and I'm very happy. But you know what I'm saying. Midlife crisis.
You intend to become divorced.
No, I certainly do not. But
your wife intends to divorce you.
But I cannot speak to. The future is unknown to us. But midlife crisis, respect midlife crisis no matter what. And so even though I think I know him, I might not and you might not, and it could be bad. So what I would say is, if you call the police anonymously, or even if you call the police and remain anonymous, That is your first best choice to resolve the problem. I know it seems cowardly. I know it seems unneighborly. And I know it seems maybe even a waste of the police's time. And probably it won't work. But maybe it does. And if it doesn't, then you can take the next step and go over to him and say, hey, I saw the police were by the other night. I certainly didn't call them. I'm not the kind of jerk who would do that, but it is true that it's a little loud. And then he'll cry. And maybe you'll get married.
I just want to emphasize that, like, having a really loud open window EDM party between 2 and 5 a.m. is not an acceptable thing, whether or not you live in a quiet neighborhood. I've lived in the city my entire life. That is not an okay thing to do. Like, it's one thing if we're talking about 11:30 p.m. or even 12:30 a.m., but if it's 3 o'clock in the morning and someone is having an outrageous party jam, not cool.
That's part of the reason why I kind of feel that even though I think I know who this dude is, he's living outside. He's living in the lawless lands in his own mind. Do you know what I mean? Like, he's making decisions that are so far beyond the pale of civilization that there may be an unpredictable element to him that you do not wish to court personally. But it is the case that I think for the most part, in my experience living in cities, and I'm talking about living in New York City, which is a real city. It's not a half-baked city like Los Angeles, which is basically a desert with some streets in it, and the nature constantly trying to take back over by sending coyotes into your house and scorpions.
We do have a lot of coyotes. They have their own concerts.
When you live in a population-dense area, these like live rock concerts and impromptu street fairs and other completely inexcusably wrong behavior for dense urban living, these things tend to burn themselves out pretty quickly. And so a dude who's listening to EDM music from 2 a.m. to 5 a.m., you kind of get the feeling like this guy is going through some transitions in his life. He will probably move eventually or be evicted or get into trouble with the law. Whether or not you call the cops. Hang in there.
Here's something from Lawrence. I have an argument with my girlfriend. I have a terrible job where I spend long nights alone, and I spend much of this time working out the theology of a creepy new religion centered on Vlad the Impaler.
Of course you do.
My girlfriend thinks I should stop doing this because it's, quote, unsettling, unquote, and, quote, strange, unquote. I don't see a problem. It helps pass the time, and it's not like I'm crazy enough to ever quite believe it or social enough to make someone else believe it. Is my girlfriend right that I should stop because this is a weird and unhealthy hobby, or am I right that it's an amusing and harmless one?
The answer really depends on how much you enjoy having a girlfriend to begin with.
What would Vlad the Impaler do? That's what I would ask you.
WWVTID? Question mark?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he'd probably impale.
Yeah, that's his main thing from his name anyway.
All right, so let me understand this. You are a night watch person or a parking lot attendant or a toll booth operator. Or you have some other job where you're alone all night long and you are developing a theology based on Vlad the Impaler. So you're developing a fictional religion around the dark deity of Vlad the Impaler, who is the in some ways inspiration for Bram Stoker's Dracula. He took the name Dracula from Vlad the Impaler, but in all ways just a first class medieval creep, terrible ruler who did terrible things and killed a lot of babies. I think what you do in your own time is fine. You know, you're basically You're basically creating a Dungeons & Dragons module. If it is interesting to you, that's fine. But if you are going to tell people about it, say, a girlfriend or many thousands of podcast listeners, you should expect some questioning of your motives. It's a weird thing to do. Sam Shepard learned to write plays while being a parking lot attendant. He would write plays all night long. And look where he went. He married Jessica Lange. That could be you. I think there's more of a future in creating works of art that you can share with other people than creating cuckoo religions about murderers. There's no question that someone will raise an eyebrow and maybe then a pitchfork and a torch and chase you out of the parking lot. But if this is your life and this is your art form, by all means, do it. Enjoy it. If you want to keep your girlfriend, write your creepy thoughts in a little Kevin Spacey diary from the movie Seven. And keep it at work. Don't bring it home. I don't want to suggest that you're wasting your time. You're clearly getting something out of it. And it sounds like, you know, anyone in that position would need to find a way to pass the time that engages them. All I'm saying is, don't tell your girlfriend, because this is a no-brainer. She's going to think it's weird. And be careful who else you tell it to, because maybe you're going to suddenly start a religion without even meaning to. For example, I have converted to your religion. And now I rely on you. What's his name again? I'm just going to call him Ceaușescu.
His name's Lawrence.
Pope Ceaușescu, you have to give me purpose and direction in life. I've abandoned all my worldly possessions, and I am coming to your parking lot booth. Take me in as a member of your religion and show me the way.
We're going to take a quick break. We'll be back with more of Judge John Hodgman in a minute. You're listening to Judge John Hodgman. I'm Bailiff Jesse Thorne. Of course, the Judge John Hodgman podcast, always brought to you by you, the members of MaximumFun.org. Thanks to everybody who's gone to MaximumFun.org/join. And you can join them by going to MaximumFun.org/join. The Judge John Hodgman podcast is also brought to you this week by Made In.
Oh, when you're trying to buy cookware, it's like there's so many questions, so many choices, so many pros and cons. But you should know, Made In has only pros. Pros like Tom Colicchio, Nancy Silverton, Brooke Williamson. That's right, I changed the meaning of pro from good things to professionals who use Made In, because they do. Professional chefs love Made In cookware because it's got so many pros.
Can I tell you something about Nancy Silverton, one of the Made In pros?
Yeah, I would love to hear it.
My friend used to work for Nancy Silverton, or one of her restaurants. And not only did she adore Nancy Silverton, but Nancy Silverton personally catered her wedding.
That's a real pro move, if you ask me.
Yeah, just like getting Made In cookware. These are people with taste, if you get my double meaning.
I do.
This isn't a Johnny-come-lately company. This evolved from a 100-year-old kitchen supply business, and they work with multi-generational crafters to put together every single piece. So includes carbon steel, stainless clad, plateware, glassware. I know, John, you love all that stuff that you have in your cabinet.
Yeah, I got the glassware. I got the plateware. And I definitely love that carbon steel. And I love their stainless steel. It's got exactly what demanding chefs and I dare say demanding judges look for when they're buying cookware.
And you don't have to find a kitchen supply store. They sell it online. It's delivered straight to your door with the quality that the pros use.
And can I just say, it's at a fraction of the price of other top brands. That's for real. This is really good stuff and it's really affordable. And yet, as affordable as it is, I'm going to tell you this. Judge John Hodgman listeners get 10% off full-priced items from Made In. For full details, visit madeincookware.com/JJHO10. That's madeincookware.com/JJHO10.
The Judge John Hodgman podcast is also brought to you this week by the good folks over there at Squarespace.
Squarespace is the all-in-one website platform for entrepreneurs to stand out and succeed online. Squarespace makes it easy to create a beautiful website, engage with your audience, and sell anything from products to content to time. All in one place, all on your terms. Time, Jesse.
Have you heard about this Squarespace Blueprint?
No. Tell me all about it.
Squarespace Blueprint lets you choose from a professional layout and build a website for your product or your service or your creations from the ground up. You can accept payments, including Apple Pay, among other things. It is all seamless and easy and comes out gorgeous, whether or not you went into it with big time skills. That's what Squarespace is all about, helping you express yourself and helping you share your work with the world.
Go to squarespace.com for a free trial. And when you're ready to launch, go to www.squarespace.com/Hodgman to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain.
Hey, when you listen to podcasts, it really just comes down to whether or not you like the sound of everyone's voices. My voice is one of the sounds you'll hear on the podcast Dr. Game Show, and this is the voice of co-host and fearless leader Joe Firestone.
This is a podcast where we play games submitted by listeners, and we play them with callers over Zoom we've never spoken to in our lives. So that is basically the concept of the show. Pretty chill.
So take it or leave it, bucko. And here's what some of the listeners have to say.
It's funny, wholesome, and it never fails to make me smile.
I just started listening and I'm already binging it. I haven't laughed this hard in ages. I wish I'd discovered it sooner.
You can find Dr. Game Show on MaximumFun.org.
Video games can make you laugh.
They can make you cry.
They can even make you sing.
We're the hosts of Triple Click.
It's a podcast about video games.
This is an exciting time for new games, from Diablo to Final Fantasy.
From Starfield to Street Fighter.
From Zelda to, oh, who are we kidding? We're just going to talk about Zelda.
Whether you play games or you just like hearing about them, we've got you covered.
Find us at MaximumFun.org or wherever you get your podcasts. Bye.
Welcome back to the Judge John Hodgman podcast. I'm Bailiff Jesse Thorne. With me, as always, from Maine, a.k.a. Vacation Land, Judge John Hodgman.
Yeah, by the way, during the break, I invented a religion.
Don't you dare tell me about it, Judge Hodgman. Don't you dare.
No, Jesse, I need to open your eyes. You need to open your eyes. Because from now on, I am worshiping the spirit that lives inside my Griswold number 8 tight top Dutch oven.
The spirit of effective seasoning?
The spirit of effective natural nonstick polymerized surface of a well-seasoned cast iron pan. That, my friend, is magic. No, how dare you suggest that there is no God and that humans came from monkeys when I can cook a fried egg without Teflon. From now on, I'm going to wear this cast iron pan around my neck all the time. And everyone else who wants to be part of my religion will do the same thing. And also give me money and status that I haven't earned.
Okay, here's something from Aaron. I'm in a dispute with my wife and my brother concerning air travel and car travel. I think that short trips, less than about 1,000 miles, should ideally be taken in a car. They both think that all trips should be taken by plane. We have a trip plan traveling from Denver, Colorado to Omaha, Nebraska. It should take about 7 hours to drive the 540 miles between the two cities. It would take about 5 hours by plane, including flight time and waiting time. If we travel by car, we can leave Omaha whenever we want and could skip paying for a night's hotel. So you can just sleep while they drive. There are 4 people going on the trip. And by my calculations, we would save enough money going by car to pay for the hotel and the event tickets. I calculated that, comparing the total costs of flights to the total costs of gasoline for the car. My brother thinks I'm underestimating the cost of driving and wants to include wear and tear, oil changes, tires, etc. He based his driving estimates on the IRS recommended 55 cents per mile, which I find ridiculous. I'm asking for an order. That was a dramatic reading, by the way.
I really appreciated it, but I think it was necessary to point out just how angry this guy is.
He's pretty upset.
The IRS recommended 55 cents per mile wear and tear cost estimate on a car, which I had never heard of before.
Yeah, that's for your taxes. Like if you're doing business travel in your personal car, that's how much you can take off your taxes for gas and wear and tear. I'm asking for an order commanding my wife and brother to take this trip and other short trips by car rather than airplane.
So, Aaron, I find all of your math confusing, and I find your basic rejection of the IRS estimate to be illogical and random. Like, you just want, if you want to use math to support your case, you got to use the math that exists. You think the IRS came up with that out of their hats? Their snap rim fedoras that all the IRS agents wear? It's true, you know. They love those hats. Well, probably they did come up with it out of the hat, but the point is that's all you got to go on. You want to, you're arguing two issues here. One is the math, the finances of traveling by car to this particular place versus the finances of traveling by plane. And you could do all the math and then find out that your brother and his wife still would prefer to take the plane because that's what they want to do. And so I feel like all of this confusing math talk is nothing but that, confusing math talk. What it comes down to is, what's the better way to travel, by plane or by car? You like to go by car. They like to go by plane. Now, I know it's going to throw your precious math off if you're the only one taking this car trip. But if you want to go by car, go by car. Meet them there. You're not your brother's wife's keeper. Do your own thing. You're a grown man. Do I think you should travel by car from Denver to Omaha? I bet you it's a boring drive. But I've never done it, and I would love to see what America looks like between those two points. At the, you know, even if it's the most boring, straight, flat, fast drive that you ever take, you're going to have lots of time alone in your car to listen to some amazing podcasts, or maybe tune into some weird local radio stations, or maybe see, or maybe develop a religion around Vlad the Impaler. Or, you know, I agree with you. I think driving is more fun than flying a lot of the time, if it's feasible. But maybe it's just your brother and his wife don't want to spend 7.5 hours in a car going in a straight line all the time with you. So throw the math out the window and watch it in your rearview mirror as you drive and leave your brother and wife alone to do whatever they want.
Do you think that the brother and the wife are just anticipating 7.5 hours of having math yelled at them?
Yeah, maybe that's exactly what's going to happen. Maybe he's going to play all of his boring math podcasts. You know, I recently drove from Charlotte, North Carolina, to Charleston, the capital of West Virginia. And it was a 5-hour drive, and it would have been dumb to fly because I'd never been in that part of the world. Who knew what I would be missing? And my worry was that it was just going to be boring and kind of ugly interstate driving. But in fact, it was gobsmackingly, jaw-droppingly gorgeous as I entered into the Appalachian mountain range, going through western West Virginia and then into West Virginia. It was unbelievable. And I stopped off at a West Virginia, huge West Virginia crafts service station. And they had all these West Virginia crafts, and including a bunch of marbles, because they make marbles in West Virginia. And I bought a bunch of West Virginia marbles, and I had a good salad. None of that would have happened if I had flown a plane.
Well, I can certainly understand that challenge.
I wonder what it's like. You know what I want you to do, Aaron? I want you to drive from Denver to Omaha, and then I want you to write back to us with 5 great things to see or do on the road between Denver and Omaha. That's all. That's all I want you to do. That's my sentence for you. And stop bothering your brother and his wife.
Here's something from Steven. My wife and I can't agree on how best to listen to your podcast. I feel one should start with the first episode release and move forward chronologically. The listener understands how the podcast has evolved. She focused on recent episodes when first listening, now jumps around to titles that seem interesting. The difference of opinion denies us the opportunity to discuss a particular case for fear of spoilers. I was listening first, so I think we should follow my strategy. It's called the Firsties Principle. I ask that you find that she should start listening from the beginning to foster family conversation. I don't mind if she skips episodes that don't appeal to her.
Ugh.
That's absurd premise, number one. What episode wouldn't appeal to her?
Right. Each one has been studied, focus grouped, and guaranteed to be 100% appealing.
If you knew how many screenings we do in a mall in Las Vegas, Nevada,
yeah,
grabbing young people from around the country so that we can sand off the rough edges of a given episode of Judge John Hodgman, if you knew the work that we did focus grouping this thing.
Yeah. And, you know, each episode, first of all, each episode we record is 7 hours long. And then we whittle it down. Then the long editing process begins.
Well, we usually do one to the script, and then we do one just for us.
For funds.
And then Judd Apatow pitches us what are called alts, which is alternative jokes to the same setup.
Yeah, just so that we have options, what we call ops.
Yeah, exactly. We got to have alt ops.
Yeah.
If we're going to go into that focus group in Las Vegas, Nevada.
And once we get through the funds and the options, then we get to show it to all the kids. And the real joy of it, Jesse, is sitting in the back of the podcast theater and hearing a live audience enjoy it for the first time, the way it was meant to be heard, in a podcastatorium.
Yeah.
And that's when you really know when things are 50% appealing, when things are 25% appealing, rarely when things are 0% appealing. What you wait for is the 100% appealing. 100% appealing on the dials that the audience, the focus groups have. And also we also have some EEGs going on, and we attach wires to their brains and eyelids to see how many times they're closing their eyes.
So we have some EEGs, some MDMA.
Yeah. Yeah, they're drugged pretty heavily so that we can get, so, you know, it's basically a truth serum of our own devising.
That, by the way, is why so many of our episodes are just about Vicks VapoRub.
Exactly. And so basically, there's no way, right or wrong, to listen to the Judge John Hodgman podcast, because we have done all the work for you to make sure that each episode will make you feel as though you've been given a truth serum drug and will provide you with the exact same amount of amusement, catharsis, and enjoyment of the foibles of human monsters. Human monsters of the kind who try to force their wives to listen to podcasts in a particular order. Now, come on, dude. You're lucky your wife is listening to a podcast. You know how hard it is to get someone to listen to a podcast? You got to trap them in the car when you're driving from Denver to Omaha and, like, say, listen to this, listen to this, listen to this. Boy, oh boy. And then you never know whether then you're listening to the, this is, let me say, I'm speaking from personal experience. The podcast that obsesses you, that you then force it into someone else's ears, suddenly sounds terrible to you, and it's the most mortifying thing you can do on a long car journey. Sorry, Paul F. Tompkins, when I forced that podcast on you. Made me feel terrible. So I would say you listen to it your way. She listens to it her way. All the podcasts have numbers. When you hit upon a number that is the same, you go, hey, did you listen to 289? There isn't one yet. We're getting there. Calm down. This is all hypothetical. You listen to 289 yet? No, I haven't. Okay, let me know when you do. You listen to 289 yet? No, I haven't. Okay, let me know when you do. You listen to 289 yet? I'm never going to listen to it. Stop asking me. Or maybe it'll be, yeah, I have listened to it. Let's talk about it. It's just the way it is. People enjoy things the way they enjoy things. Let it go, dude.
Can I offer, like, my personal preference so that it's on record because people ask me this question all the time?
Your purse pref? Of course.
And again, I want to clarify, this is a personal preference. This is not any kind of binding anything. My strong preference is that if you are thinking, oh, I would like to listen to all of the episodes of this, there are almost no shows where you would not benefit from listening to the current episode first and then listening to old episodes. I'm not saying you have to work backwards or work forwards through the old episodes. If you're the kind of person who gets some satisfaction out of listening in order. You can go back to the beginning and then go through to the end. But please listen to the current episode, not least because, A, it is the one that is current. Things that are current are happening in the world, and even on a relatively timeless podcast, that is of consequence. There are advertisements and solicitations that you attend live shows and solicitations for donations. And if you are listening to something from 4 years ago, you are not supporting that podcast in any meaningful way in any of those categories. So again, like whether it's an ad-supported podcast or a listener-supported podcast or what, it probably depends on you listening to the, or even a podcast that is just meant to goose attendance at live shows. It is probably dependent on you listening to the new episode. So please, listen to the new episode. If you want to also go back and fill in the back in whatever direction you want, that's great. But please listen to the new episode. And don't ask me when I'm coming to your town when I was just in your town.
Yeah, judge defers to bailiff. It happens from time to time. You're absolutely right. That is the way you should listen to podcasts. And the way the husband is doing it is wrong. This is not a novel, dude. This is not an unfolding story, except perhaps a picture, a pointillist picture of my own madness. but pointillism, of course, is an impressionistic art form where the big picture doesn't happen until all the little points are in place, and I put them in almost randomly. So just keep listening and enjoying it. And I absolutely agree with Jesse. As with all culture, you should support. If you like the culture and want to support it, you should listen to it the way it makes money and the way that podcasts make money in both the literal and metaphoric sense. The way the podcasts make the most impact and money in the world is by listening to the most current one and keeping current with the podcast.
Here's something from Jolion or Jolion.
Julian Wagg, the insurance salesman from the Tintin comics by Hergé?
Almost certainly so.
Right, good.
My friend, the Salty Sea Captain.
Oh, blistering barnacles. This is quite a surprise to be getting a letter from a fictional Belgian insurance agent.
From a tertiary character in a popular series of almost 100-year-old comic books.
I would have taken. I know that you don't audition for and then get roles in comic books, but when it comes to Tintin, I would have taken it. I would have taken the Julian Wagg. I would have done it. Anything to be part of that world.
I'd take any job in any movie.
You know why I love that world so much? I realize Tintin's apartment was really clean before he moved into that mansion with the older sailor, and things got creepy. He lived an uncluttered life in a little apartment by himself where he did not have anything out of place, and he had some pretty nice books and a nice armchair and a dog to keep him company. And that minus the dog was everything I wanted in my life when I was 13 years old.
I presume like that you 11. Were describing a midlife crisis that you're going through right now, as discussed earlier on the show.
No. This is my 11-year-old crisis as I tried to completely skip over the terror of sexual adolescence in order to become the 43-year-old gentleman bachelor / Belgian boy reporter I felt destined to become. A life completely unbothered by clutter or sex. That was what I wanted. And that's what Tintin had. And there are all kinds of racist issues in Tintin, and Hergé was a complicated dude whose portrayal of non-white people was horrible in the early Tintin comics. And then, of course, he went through a profound change of heart and sort of opening of his worldview in the later comics, and they become less racist and less imperialist, but never quite zero racist or imperialist.
He never reaches racism zero.
Yeah, well, we're all striving for that, but I think that his journey and of self-discovery that really is marked by Tintin in Tibet, and is the sort of the opening of his eyes to where he had been wrong in these particular issues in the past, is really beautifully documented in his own work. And I think that it to some degree, but never 100%, makes up for the terrible stuff he was doing with regard to depictions of Black and Asian people in the earlier ones, and Latino people as well, and really anyone who wasn't Belgian or a white European. But that said, it's part of history, it's part of comics history, and it's great. And I'm really glad to have gotten this letter from this tertiary character, Julian Wagg, the annoying insurance salesman. Right? Because that's who it's really from, right, Jesse? Or is it just someone named Julian who lives in New Zealand?
No, I just wanted to hear you talk about the racial politics of Tintin for 20 minutes.
Yeah, I know. Just like everyone else.
While driving home through
nothing
the
but
earthquake...
a pointless picture of my madness, Jesse. That's all I ever promised.
While driving home through the earthquake-damaged east suburbs of Christchurch, New Zealand, I encountered a sign telling me to take an alternate route. It was late at night and no other cars were around, so I had no idea which way the car in front of me went. If I had wanted to be a road sign abiding citizen, I would have had to sit and wait for an unknown amount of time until another car showed up and we went one way or the other. I could then have taken an alternate route. I have listened to your rulings enough to believe you to be something of a pedant, so I am hopeful of a positive ruling. I would like the Christchurch City Council to change the signage to alternative.
You know what? Sure, dude. Tell you what, I'm going to write a letter. You know what? You draft a letter to the Christchurch City Council, and I'll sign off on it, and I'll send it, and we'll see what happens. I barely understand the distinction that you're drawing, but I admire your pedantry, so I'm going to say sure.
This person is suggesting that alternate means exclusively every other or every second, rather than the commonly accepted second definition of alternate, which is, I'm reading from the dictionary here,
thank you,
taking the place of or alternative.
But that is this an American English dictionary or is it a New Zealand English dictionary?
That's an internet dictionary, but
yeah.
What do we like? Merriam-Webster, is that our jam?
Merriam-Webster is our jam, even though they say that a hot dog is a sandwich. Emily Brewster, I still take you to task for that. What does Merriam-Webster say about alternate?
Okay, first definition is occurring or succeeding by turns.
Mm-hmm.
The second is arranged first on one side, then on the other at different levels or points along an axial line. The third is every other. The fourth is constituting an alternative.
So that's a fourth definition?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm going to give it to Julian. Dude, write a letter. You know what? You don't even have to write the letter. Why am I making you write the letter? I'm not a big star. Get me an address. Get me the name of the person in Christchurch who needs to make this change and get me the address. I will write a letter and I will read it on the air next time. Or, not, well, by the time, you know, after you, when I write it. I don't know when he's going to get me. This guy, like all pedants, he doesn't care about actually affecting change. He just wants to moan about something.
Yeah.
So we'll see. If you're serious, I will take up your cause. I want the name of the road commissioner in Christchurch, New Zealand. I want a description of five interesting things to see and do between Denver and Omaha. And I want a working theology that is internally consistent and sublime about Vlad the Impaler. And I want it by next Monday.
Judge John Hodgman is produced by Julia Smith, edited by Mark McConville. Ibarri Nexperello on the board this week here at Max Fun HQ.
And over here at WERU.org, Joel Mann runs the board.
Thank you, Joel. We are on Reddit at MaximumFun.reddit.com, on Facebook and on Twitter, where I am at Jesse Thorne and Judge Hodgman is at Hodgman. You can use the hashtag JJHO. And if you have a case for Judge John Hodgman, go to MaximumFun.org/JJHO to submit it. No case too big or too small. We reviews them all. Yeah. Thanks for listening to the Judge John Hodgman podcast.
A hot dog is not a sandwich. Come on, you guys. This is settled law. Stop bothering me about it on Twitter. Goodbye.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.